Today is June 11th, 2019. This is a Society of Women Engineers Oral History Project interview with Jean Brody and her daughters Pamela Brody and Chris Kinneman. The interviewers are Troy Eller English and Ann Perusik. Carol Polakowski, senior editor of SWE Magazine, is also here, and we are at Jean's residence in Mentor, Ohio. Jean was a member of the Society of Women Engineers and retired in 2016 at the age of 97 after a long career in engineering. Pamela and Chris are her daughters. Thank you for joining us today. So Jean, the first questions we're going to ask are about your childhood. When and where were you born?
I was born here in Lake County, Ohio, in Willowick.
And what year would that have been?
1919.
So can you tell us a little bit about your family growing up?
Well, originally, my father was a draftsman. And then he had a hardware store. And when they moved to Willowick, when they bought the house in Willowick, he became a farmer. We had 20 acres.
Wow.
And that's where I grew up.
Did your mom work or do volunteer?
No.
Or just busy raising a family?
She was just a homebody.
Yeah. And I don't mean just. So you graduated from Willoughby Union High School in 1937. What were your interests in school?
Well, I took all the math I could get, which turned out to be fortunate later on. But I started with the art teacher in my freshman year, because I was going to go to the Cleveland Institute of Art.
So that was what you wanted to do?
That's what I wanted to do.
And what did you see yourself like after the Cleveland Institute of Art? Did you have a vision for your life beyond that?
Well, after I graduated from high school, you mean, or college?
Okay, so college, like you're
well, I
to
went
go to the Art Institute, and then you thought you would have a career as an artist?
Yeah, and it turned out there just wasn't, I was a sculpture major with a minor in watercolor, obviously. I discovered nobody wanted anybody with that
background.
And by this time, my fiance, he wanted to get married before I grad. I insisted I wanted to graduate first. So I did. And then that fall in 41, in September, I married him, Chris's father. And Chris was born in 42. And he never wanted me to work, but he volunteered. And he was killed overseas in 1944 in Japan. So here I was with a two-year-old, and I lived close to my parents. And so one of my friends was working at Ohio Rubber, and she said, "Why don't you come?" And she worked in the shop in light work.
Like women did during the war, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I applied up at Ohio Rubber, and Chris's dad went into service with a general manager's son from Ohio Rubber. But I never said anything. I just applied. And 6 weeks after I was at work there, The foreman came to me and he said, "You're wanted in the front office." And the gentleman who was the general manager called me in and he said, "What are you doing in the shop? Why aren't you using your talent?"
Wow.
I said, "Well, I didn't know what I wanted to do right away." And so this was just the easiest thing to do. So he said, "Well, I'm going to have both engineers interview you." And that was the gentleman that was in charge of plant engineering and another one that was in charge of the design work. And so the final decision was I would go into the design work. And that's how I got started. And I designed molds for them for years. And then in 1948, I married Pam's father and still work. Well, they would, at that time, they would only give me 3 months maternity leave. So I quit.
And 3 months is better than what many people get now.
I agree,
it's not enough.
2.5 years later, my husband was in a business, and things were getting a little tight. And her grandmother, his mother, said to me, "Why don't you go back to work? I'm here. I could take care of Pam." And Chris already, being 11 years older, you know, she was pretty grown up by then. So I went to my boss, former boss, and he said, "Are you ready to come back to work?" I said, "Yes." And I continued until I retired. And I designed molds and sometimes parts. And the reason I was worked so much after I retired, my former boss has his own shop now. And after he opened the shop, he asked me to come and help. So I worked for him designing molds. And up until a couple of years ago. So that's the story. That's how I became, well, the thing is, I've forgotten how old Chris was, but I was already a member of SWE. Because one of the engineers in the electrical department said to me, "You know, the men's wouldn't let the women join the engineering
side." Right, the technical societies were not open to women as full members.
And one of the electrical engineers said to me, "You ought to contact, there's an organization for women engineers." So that's what I finally did. And that's why I joined so early.
Right. We saw, we looked up some of your membership records and we saw like the recommendation. The membership process is not like it was when you joined.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's because SWE was a young organization and they wanted to be sure people were really engineers. But there were other women like you who came up through more like learning as almost like an apprentice rather than an engineering degree. So they sent all this paperwork that your bosses had to fill out, and they recommended you very highly. They recommended you for a higher membership grade than the membership committee thought you should have. They kind of, I think, thought you needed to start out as an associate member and work your way up to a senior member. And on one of the forms I looked at, your boss had said that you were qualified to be a senior member based on the quality of your work and your knowledge.
Yeah.
So, well.
Well, I wound up running the drawing room.
Yeah, that's really, that says quite a lot. So how do you think being, having training in art, in painting and in sculpture, how did that help you? Because
Well, the sculpture, I think, helped me.
The spatial.
And my boss used to say I had more vision than most of them. Because I could see around things.
Yeah, your eye was trained in a certain way. In the early years, like during the war, there were other women working at Ohio Rubber, but in the years after the war, I'm making the assumption that the numbers got smaller. Is that true? And then, of course, you took time off as well.
Well, yeah, I took off 2.5 years when Pam was born, but.
When you came back, were there other women still working in the shop or on the floor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you didn't feel like isolated, that you were the only female?
Oh, well, I was the only female in engineering besides the secretary. Mm-hmm. And that was a given for the whole time I worked.
So I guess you've explained a little bit how you became the draftsman. You also were a tool engineer, and I'm not sure I understand exactly what the difference is.
A tool. Tool engineer?
Yes.
Well, if you call the molds a tool.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. I see.
And that's what they were. And I had to design them so people could run them in those big presses.
So what kinds of projects did you work on?
What kind of what?
Projects. Like what kinds of things did Ohio Rubber do? And in terms of like the projects, so you were designing the molds, but what were they for? Like what kind of parts did they
make? Automotive parts.
Automotive.
And, you know, they called it rubber, but it was really it. Now my boss calls this place Ohio Elastomers.
Elastomers.
Not rubber.
Yeah.
And I did learn also we had a plastics division. So I learned how to do plastic molds, too.
But that came later, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So what was it like to balance a family life with your career? Because particularly in the 1960s, 50s, and 60s, not many women did those things.
Well, I was fortunate enough to have two grandmothers close. And both of my girls were close to their grandmothers. And my mother especially, and Pam's dad's mother. She lived with us for a while. And that helped me a lot.
I'm sure it did. So you didn't have to worry so much about...
I knew the girls were well taken care of. And... of course, I had a homemade babysitter.
So, So you didn't have to worry about, like, getting home in time for when people got out of school or starting dinner or any of those things.
That's exactly right.
That makes balancing life and work so challenging at times. So how did your fellow workers, your colleagues and your boss, did they look at you in any way that was different because you were a woman and because you were a mother? Like, did they have other expectations for you or?
No, they just expected me to produce. And of course, one of the things, by the time I was involved with SWE, excuse me, I got to go, the company learned that they paid for my trips to SWE conventions.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I remember the first one, it was in, not the first one, but the one that made the biggest impression on me was the one we did in the East.
Was it in Hartford?
What?
There was a convention in East Hartford? Was it? No, that's...
No, it was farther south. It was in Delaware, I think, or New Jersey. Anyway, HP had a computer there. That was when I first met a computer. And I came back and I told my boss about it. And at that time, there was a computer station in Willoughby. And I've forgotten the name of it.
Don't ask me.
Up by Andrews School. Anyway, so I got to go there, and they taught me how to use the computer, and I was so enchanted with graphics on the computer. And that was long before computer, you know, long before PCs.
Yeah, right, right. And so, what graphics can do now.
Hey, Mommy, there's a glass of water over there if you need it.
Yeah, do you want to take a sip of water?
Yeah, we can take a break anytime.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, the history of the SWE conventions, where that might have been.
I'm trying to remember, because I remember her.
It was in the East, and it was...
If there was, there was one in New Jersey.
There was a New Jersey, yeah.
Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Cherry Hill, New Jersey, I remember seeing that.
Where?
In Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
That's probably where it was.
Okay. Yeah.
I couldn't remember exactly, but I knew it was in the East.
Yeah. That sounds like about the right time.
That would have been around 1981, I think. Or 80, no, 82 is Dearborn. Around 1981.
Could have been.
Yeah.
Maybe before that.
I think it was before.
I think it has to be before that if you're thinking it was.
It had to be in the early 60s, I think.
Well, I was in high school. You did a lot of that when I was in high school. You started working on the, that's what I remember.
Yeah.
So late, like 68, 60. Yeah, I know, it was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
So I went from the drafting board, you know, to the computer. And we wound up with all computers. They wound up sending them in to this big, they had these huge big computers. I got to visit over there, of course. And the teacher was a Dutchman. And he was great fun, as well as being very smart. And he was a good teacher, and he was real proud of me because I was the only woman over there.
How many people were in the class?
Not very many.
Yes.
I think there were three or four of us.
Oh, that was very intimate, almost like one-on-one learning.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It turned out to be that way, really.
So then you brought what you learned
back. Yeah. And eventually, of course, we got PCs. So.
And so did you implement all of that at Ohio Rubber? Did you kind of bring the computer usage to Ohio Rubber?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what was that like? Was that just an exciting time? Were people receptive and eager to learn?
I didn't pay much attention to that.
What other people did, you just did what. That was probably a good strategy.
You know, we were upstairs in our Succotan, and we were up. Our office was near the president's office, and all the other offices were down at the other end of the building. So. I knew a lot of people, but I never saw much of their work.
I see.
I never knew. Yeah. The stenographers and the our controller said to me, I was trying to get some information on investing, you know. And he said to me, I can't understand why you don't understand more about finance. He said, you use math all the time. I said, but not that kind of math.
Right. Yes, and investing is very different than it's a whole different animal. So you mentioned how you heard about Sweet, that was actually from another man, the company who told you. And so when you first joined Sweet, though, there wasn't a section here in Northeast Ohio, right? You were
no,
a member at large.
There was, yeah, just starting. That we had meetings here. Mm-hmm. And we used to meet over at the airport. And Peggy Evanich was part of that.
Mm-hmm. So you were part of the group that launched the Northeast Ohio section.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How many people were at the beginning of the section? Like, how many members did you have?
I can't remember.
But you did a lot of career outreach. I looked at some of your reports that you sent to the Sweet president reporting on, at that time, reporting on your activities.
Yeah.
And so you had a big push toward toward outreach to young people.
Yeah.
And you judged scholarship
applications. Yeah, I used to go talk to the girls in high school up in Chardon. We lived up in Chardon area for a while. And several school affairs.
She never came to my high school.
Oh. What was it like talking to those girls? Were they receptive? Surprised that you were a woman engineer?
Yeah, they were very receptive. And I was pretty active in church, too, and they all knew what I did, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. All my teachers knew what she did. So Mrs. Hawkins, my geometry teacher, would sit me down and go, your mother is so good at this. Why?
Why aren't you?
Does she not help you? It's just like, go away. Not my wheelhouse. So, yeah, everybody knew her.
Yeah. How did it feel like? Did you feel like the I don't want to say the oddball, but like the different person in a way because your mom was doing this kind of work and you're, I can't imagine that you had friends whose mothers were engineers or doing non-traditional work.
Just kind of thinking back, most of my friends' moms were, if they had jobs, they were they were traditional women's work, teachers or counselors or nurses or whatnot, but not too many where we lived. We lived in Munson and Chardon. In the 60s. And so that was, mostly, it was kind of in transition then. So it was mostly either farm kind of families or people who owned businesses in Chardon.
Yeah.
So, they worked at the drugstore or they, did whatever.
Right.
And so mine was definitely the only mom that had all kinds of wacky sculptures all over the house and, lots of paintings and, my mom worked and, all that kind of stuff. So it was, it was different. I don't know if she made me an oddball. I don't know. It was just the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just
that you took it for granted.
It was just the way it was. Yeah. I mean, there was Grandma Brody and Grandma Noble, and my sister that I tortured, and that's just the way it was. So I didn't think it was anything special at the time. Yeah. It's just the way it was.
Yeah. Another woman that we've talked to whose mother was an early SWE member had a couple siblings. And she said when she first went to school and they were filling out forms and they wrote down that their mother worked and that she was like a rocket engineer. This is the Brill family. The teachers didn't believe it, and they thought the kids were making it up.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it was so unusual. And she said, finally, when the third kid in the family came along, the schools would say, well, that is this family. It's absolutely true. But they thought the kids initially were making it up. So.
Well, when I went to elementary school, I had a lot of her teachers. And one of her favorite teachers was the principal at that time. And I liked math when I got in high school. Did very well in math, but did not go into engineering. It's not my thing. I went into nursing when I was 36, so.
Well, yeah, I'm a sign language interpreter, so that's like
totally
left turn.
Totally different. Totally different.
Did either of you go do like any art as a hobby or anything?
I sewed a lot.
Yeah.
And she does physical art. She's very good.
Yeah, I mean I dabble, but I'm like one step above stick figure kind of. I'm not
a little bit higher than that.
Not a lot, no.
Yeah.
So while you were working, were you able to do like maybe watercolors or sculpture like as a on the side? You never left it?
Very active in art. I was also a member of the Art Society at the Museum of Natural History. And I used to go there all the time. I had a very good friend who graduated with me from the art school. And she was a jeweler. And we used to go painting a lot. In my spare time, on a day like today, if it was nice, we'd go.
On a beautiful summer day, you'd go outside and paint?
Yeah, all these. Right. I did.
Yeah, all the sculptures and all the pictures. All the pictures are hers.
Wow.
All the sculptures.
These are.
This one up here, I think, is the one from Maine.
That's Maine.
I used to go up. When I was alone, Peggy Evanich and I used to go to Maine And we had a cottage up there. I mean, and that's painted.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And did you do the painting of your parents as well? Mm-hmm. So you were very comfortable working with a human figure too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Say for the purpose of the recording that we are looking at different watercolor paintings. That Jean did, outdoors, nature scenes, and also a portrait of her parents.
And the miniatures.
The miniatures.
All those miniatures are yours, too. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, and the sculptures, of course.
And those sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sculpture also.
There's another one
behind the chair. Oh, wow. Did you ever exhibit like in the May show? That was a popular art
yes,
show.
Yes, I did.
You did. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to exhibit it. I managed to get in most time. Yeah. Now they don't do it anymore.
No, and I should probably say for the purpose of the recording at the Cleveland Institute of, not the Cleveland Institute of Art, at the Cleveland Museum of Art, there was always an annual spring show called the May Show.
Yeah, that was
and
it.
And it was a juried exhibit.
Yeah.
And it was a competitive process to be part of that exhibit. So
indeed.
You were able to do that and still advance as an engineer, that's very impressive. So I have a question about sort of the women's rights movement of the 1960s and early 70s. And I know in 1966, you were on the governor of Ohio's Committee on the Status of Women.
Yes, I was.
And then you also served on Ohio's Advisory Council for the Bureau of Employment Services. So how did you get involved in these?
I got a telephone call one day, okay. And the man said, I'm trying to remember how he put it. The governor would like to have you come and be on the committee for the status of women in Ohio. I said, oh? And he said, are you a Republican? I said, well, mostly. And he laughed. He laughed. He said, well, I say it loud and clear. And I think it was because at that time they had a list of women engineers, and because of SWE, I was, and my name was Brody. I was at the top of the list.
In alphabetical order.
And that's how I got on there. I do have a copy of the report that I finally made. And the company, Ohio Rubber, at this time, they were bought by Eagle Picture Industries. And so they helped me with the survey of different companies around the state.
So you gathered information about what women were doing at other companies, and that was part of your report?
Yeah.
And was that when, was Rhodes the governor at the time, Jim Rhodes?
Yeah, Jim Rhodes.
Yeah.
Yes, he had us, he had the whole crew. I was industry, okay, and they had medicine and stenography and the whole thing. They were all separate. And he was great. He had us all for a luncheon one day in Columbus. I had to go to Columbus and the State House.
So you had like a lunch at the State House with
the governor.
So what came of this this committee and the reports then? Was that like implemented in to develop some policies?
I have no idea.
They
published the report. And I have it someplace up here.
if you come across it, I'd love to have a chance to look at it at some time.
You want to see if it's up there?
I'll look maybe after.
Okay.
And if I can find it, I'll send it to Anne. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. But that would be perfect. Yeah. So how important was it to you to be part of these things? You must have felt very honored.
I was dumbfounded, really. I mean, I didn't expect anything like that. I met a lot of nice people. One of the women on the committee was the mayor of Southern Ohio, on the way to Cincinnati, their city.
Dayton?
What?
Dayton?
No. Smaller.
But, you know, in 1966, not very many women were mayors.
No. And
so they had to be a very, you know, very unusual.
You met Maxine?
Huh?
You met Maxine that way.
Yeah, that's how I met Maxine.
Mm-hmm. Maxine Levin. So.
Yeah. She was very active here in Cleveland. She was very wealthy and lived in Gates Mills. But she was a great gal.
She was a lot of fun.
So, because you were doing this work, did you consider yourself part of, like, that's when the women's movement was gaining momentum? Did you feel like you were part of that?
Yes, definitely. My girls used to kid me about being a liver.
That's not an expression you hear anymore.
I think my dad kidded you more about being a woman's liver.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't quite know what to do with you at that point.
Well, it seemed like that momentum then sort of died. Mm-hmm. And then it got revived again.
Yeah, right.
You know, and like now we're in a whole different place.
And you know, we fought so hard for Roe versus Wade, and now they're...
Yeah. And I think people are quite shocked that it's this.
And it's such a small percentage of people.
Yes, yes. I was just reading about some of the statistics on general attitudes, mm-hmm. and the attitudes between men and women in the general population, they match pretty well. You know, a very small percentage of people like leading this fight, and they've been working at it for a long time.
Maybe 15% or something crazy.
Yes, very small percent.
Do you remember telling me what you did with your boss when they were talking about the ERA and all that stuff, and you went in and demanded a raise?
Oh, yeah.
That's a great story. Please tell us.
Yeah, they passed the ERA, you know. And I knew I wasn't getting as much money as the men did. This is when we were still using drafting boards, okay? And... the general manager who knew me. When they passed that ERA thing, I walked in there and I said to him, you know what? I don't make nearly as much money as the men on the drawing board. And I do a heck of a lot more work. And I said, I think I should get paid more.
And he said...
Well, he said, well, we'll have to work on that. But I never did get a whole lot more.
You did get some, though. He gave you some. Yeah, I did some.
I think the law you're referring to wasn't the ERA. There was another law, though, because the full ERA still hasn't passed.
Yeah.
But there was another law that
it's like the equal pay or something.
It was something like that.
That.
It was more of an equal pay.
Yeah, you know, equal pay for equal work.
Yes, yes. You know, probably for people listening to this history, you probably should point out, or we should point out, that when you started, it was still in the days of there were help wanted ads for women and help wanted ads for men.
Yeah.
And that pay scales could be drastically different for the same work.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very glad you confronted him. It didn't get the full result you wanted. But, you know, you were promoted to senior design engineer in 1970. So that had to put you in a different pay grade. And your responsibilities had to expand then.
Yeah.
And when you convinced the company to use CAD and CAM technologies, mm-hmm. that had to be a big shift. I'm sure your compensation had to reflect that too, no? I mean, for those things, you should have received bigger pay increases.
Yeah, well, I should have.
Yeah.
Actually,
I remember when you went to school for CAD.
Mm-hmm. When we what?
When you went to school for CAD.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
Yeah, that was fun. Mm-hmm. And Jake was the mm-hmm. teacher. And he was impressed with me, so that helped.
So, let's see, we talked about being a charter member of Northeast Ohio Section, and that section was chartered actually in 78, according to like the records I've got.
Is that when it started?
The
I couldn't
itself,
remember.
But there were... I think prior to being a section, probably there were some other people here that you might have been members at large rather than part of a section. But you were then the section president and the section representative at the Council of Section Representatives. Do you have any memories about that that are...
Not really.
Not really? It was just routine?
Yeah.
SWE has changed its governance structure in the last few years.
I would imagine.
And so it's a different structure. And there's like a Senate. It's a smaller governing body. But then the national, or I should say like the society-wide different committees have like a bigger role. So it's, and it's had to change and adapt because life has changed a lot.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
I lost contact completely with SWE after I retired. I don't know why.
You're talking about retiring from Ohio Rubber, right?
Yeah.
Because you kind of...
Yeah, well, I know.
I didn't really retire. The way our question is, you semi-retired around 1985.
Yeah, I retired from Ohio Rubber in 1985.
But you continued to work part-time and in consulting for more than 30 years until 2016. So why did you want to continue working?
Because I enjoyed it. And I found it interesting, and especially when my former boss opened his own shop out in Perry here, and Ohio Elastomers. And he asked me to come help him, and I could work anything I wanted, you know.
So what were some of the projects you worked on in that period of time?
After I tried?
Yes.
Oh, well, he had presses and the whole of the McGill, and so I was designing molds for him. And
didn't you do car parts, like aftermarket car parts and stuff like that?
That's what he did.
I took a whole photo series of her at Ohio Elastomers with her molds and stuff like that. So.
Oh, I'd love to see copies of those. That would be great.
I think something important to know is that when she was at Ohio Rubber, she not only designed the molds, she took the mold down and made sure it worked in the press.
Oh, wow.
So you had this little 5'1" person pulling this press down. So she wasn't beyond making sure everything worked.
She'd take me downtown. Like, I remember her coming back from a day at the presses, because she would go down just to see how it all come out. Mm-hmm. And that was back in the day in Cleveland when you knew it was a good day downtown, if you could see the top of Terminal Tower, because the smog was so bad, you know, because all the foundries were still open and everything. And so there were a couple of times she took me with her, and that was always fun because it was loud and there was banging and just all this stuff. But she would come home from doing that, times I wasn't with her, and she would go, "Look at my hair." And she'd have black rubber particles in her hair and, you know, just smell like a giant tire. I just remember that because she would be down at the, you know, at the shop checking out the stuff.
And that's the days before everybody was wearing slacks or jeans. I used to walk in the shop with 3-inch heels and a skirt.
Oh, my gosh.
To watch how the mold is running, you know. Mm-hmm. Or to explain how I got into a lot of automatic stuff so that they didn't have to work so hard. Because sometimes you had split bars that had to be moved with a cylinder. And I would show them how to do it. And they used to, when I think back on the, and I was so short, that's why I always wore the 3-inch.
And we took, my husband and I came and took a tour because it was one of the anniversaries. And she took us on the tour, and everybody said, "Hi, Jean." Every department, everywhere. So she knew everybody.
Oh, sure.
Well, he had to.
Yeah.
To get the work done, he wanted to get done.
Because I worked with everybody, you know, from the machine shop all the way through. So I used to get out in the machine shop a lot.
Yeah. In your skirt and your 3-inch heels. You
know, well, I didn't always know if they could do something.
Right.
Yeah.
So then I'd go out to the machine shop and discuss it with them, and then we'd do it the best way.
Did you get any resistance when you came to? No.
You know, it's been all of the whole sexual harassment thing has like boiled to the surface. Wonder why. But I asked her when we were watching something about Me Too movement, and I asked her because, I mean, you know, I was just like, did any of your, and she was a dish. She was a pretty, she still is, but she was very beautiful. Yeah. And I was just like, did anybody hit on you or bother you or, you know, do anything weird? And she was like, "No, I just told him I was a married woman and I didn't mess around with that kind of stuff."
You drew the line very quickly.
So, you know, if it happened, I don't know. She was small but mighty, I guess, and just shoved him on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just yeah. ruled like she did us.
I know, right?
So, do you have any advice, like, for current or future women engineers?
Well, not really. I think the education has changed a lot now, and I think it's much easier with computers, I'll tell you. And I still use a computer. Not well, but I do. They've advanced so much since I first started with them.
Definitely.
At the shop she was working in part-time, she learned 3D from one of the young men that came in. And she said, I don't like it. It fills up your whole screen. Because it required so many things to get at it.
She was, her boss at Ohio Elastomers was looking for someone to replace Mom eventually. And was looking and looking and looking. Because when he left, he put her in charge of his shop and that type of thing. So she was kind of the next person in line. And so he was looking for her to train someone. And she said something really interesting to me of that, you know, these kids, they come and they do all this stuff, but they can't see. They can't pick something up and visualize it inside out or backward to forward and all of that stuff. And that makes it hard for them to translate the prototype onto a drawing and to make a reverse mold of something like that. And she said, they all have a hard time seeing. And so that always kind of stuck with me. So.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Being able to see around something has helped a great deal.
I think your art background served you very well.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Because in art school, I had to build my own molds out of plaster. Mm-hmm. And my instructor said, you have to make be able to do the molds and pour the plaster. That's the way I did that one. That one we did at home with her dad helping me. But that made a big difference, I think.
I think your experience also shows like how versatile a person can be, taking one background or one type of training and then channeling it into something completely different.
Well, part of it, I think, is because my father, who had early on been a draftsman, taught me to read blueprints when I could read. And I never had a problem reading blueprints or knowing what to do with blueprints. And it's amazing how many people can't read a blueprint. I think that all helped me.
And she also was a very talented piano player.
Oh, we haven't talked about that at all.
Her mother was a good piano player, and she was you were a good piano player also.
Well, I was.
Well, maybe you never were.
They had a whole group of friends that would get together, and my dad played a trap set, so he played the drums, and their friend Woody played the saxophone, and Mom would be on the piano. And
how fun.
So they would get together and jam in the living room. So, yeah.
Yeah, we did that a lot.
Yeah, you did.
I always had a piano.
So do you have any advice for people, either about like their career, you know, how to build like a career that's satisfying, or some advice on living a happy, long, fulfilled life? Like, what's your secret?
I really don't have a secret. I was always pretty upbeat. I seldom got down, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, you went through a lot.
I think, of course, I was an only child. I always wanted a brother or sister. Never had them. That's why I wanted at least two. But probably just to look on the good side more, and I don't know. It's really hard to explain. I just was happy doing what I did. And I think that makes a difference if you're interested in what you're doing. I still love to paint, but I can't because I don't have equipment here. But I'm managing pretty well.
I would say. Okay, anything else before we wrap up?
Well, both our homes are full of her artwork also. Mm-hmm. So it's not just here.
Yeah. No, she was prolific, that's
very,
for sure.
And she's close friends that also mm-hmm. have her artwork.
She yeah. has a whole galaxy of animals.
I think you and I were talking last night when we were talking about Anne and Troy yeah. and Carol coming to see you, and all of a sudden it slipped my mind what I was going to say. I know what it was, because I was asking her, because I figured Chris and I would learn some stuff
yes.
through this process. And one of the things that kind of struck me was that for that time, the men around her gave her, I mean, credit, you know, because it's, you know, she wasn't, mom didn't like, I'm going to be, you know, she didn't like get in there and realize engineering was her passion, but somebody recognized that she had talent and took a risk. And so, I don't know, her bosses at Ohio Rubber were pretty phenomenal. Mm-hmm. To give the lady a chance.
Yes.
Because that just, you know, I talked to other women in industrial or non-traditional professions mm-hmm. in her age, and they had to fight and claw and all that stuff. And so it was just really kind of amazing that the guys at Ohio Rubber recognized that in her. It's kind of amazing that they didn't find any other women in the whole wide world to help work alongside her. But at least they got one. So that, to me, that's kind of amazing that happened.
Yeah.
You just reminded me of something. Mm-hmm. When I first interviewed Howard Schultz, my boss, he wasn't happy because they decided he was going to get me instead of the plant engineer. Oh. So he said to me, well, we'll have you work in the blueprint room. Back then we had a blueprint room. Until you get used to I had never seen a drawing machine. I was used to a T-square and triangle, okay? So I had to get used to this drawing machine. He said, until you get used to this drawing machine, you sit, work in the blueprint. I worked in the blueprint room for 6 weeks. And he decided I better start drawing, and never look back.
Well, so you still had to prove yourself.
You did have to.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you got a chance.
Yeah, well, Howard, yeah, he wasn't happy, but.
Yeah.
In the long run, because they probably gave more women more opportunities.
It's like you opened the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to your point about how it was a very unique experience, in 1961, there was a study done by an industrial relations news that said that 81% of male bosses would not hire a woman engineer in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I think your company was very much ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm. Very much, yeah.
Well, you know, it was still wartime, too, and there weren't too many men available. But I was very fortunate to have good bosses. And he was very happy to get it when I wanted to come back after I had her.
So, they didn't think you'd come back, did they? No, that was permanent.
Oh, are you ready to come back to work? He said, you could start Monday. I said, wait.
I'm not that ready.
This was like on Friday, you know.
Oh my
gosh. He wanted me to start the next. So we waited a week. I think that's when we still had a boat.
Yes.
Yeah, we had a boat too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
So you went out on the lake?
Oh, yes, yeah. They were yacht club cruiser. Members and sailors and all that kind of stuff.
And a whole bunch of teenage friends for me.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right.
We ran around and did all kinds of stuff.
We took the boat, the Coast Guard post boating course, because we had a boat.
So you were very knowledgeable. Yeah, I know. I'm familiar with that course. I haven't taken it, but my brothers did when my brother got a boat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's it.
Wow. Is there anything else?
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to add that we didn't talk about?
I'm still in contact with my former boss.
Really?
Oh, wow. That's what I'm What about some of the other women who founded the Northeast Ohio section? Are you in contact with some of those women?
Well, Peggy Evanich and I have kept in pretty close contact over the years. She's been in Florida a long time, but she just moved back to Ohio.
So she's in the Cleveland area now?
She's Canton.
She's near Canton.
She lives in the Canton area.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm thinking, too.
I absolutely know her name.
Yes, I've seen her name many
I'm
times.
I'm sure you do, because she...
I would happen to be able to have you get in touch with her.
Could you? That would be great.
Yeah.
She was very active, and she worked for NASA in Washington, D.C.
And my husband contacted her because he wanted to see one of the flights go up, and she got him tickets. So that was really great.
Yeah, I've seen her name. I've actually seen an old picture of her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you might have been in the picture too, because it was when the section was chartered. And
might have been.
Yeah. If I have it, I'll get a copy to you.
Oh, great.
Well, that's where I met Peggy.
Yeah.
Because at that time she was working over at
I'll have to start a new scrapbook.
like NASA Lewis? Was she a Lewis? Yeah.
So.
I can show you. When you're done, I can show you some pictures of her when she was a young woman.
I have a cool picture of the drafting room somewhere.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and it's all the drafting tables full of people, and there's acres of men in white shirts, you know, because they've all got their jackets off, yes. And they're all hunched over their tables. Way over in the corner, there's this little figure with a dark jacket on, and it's mom, and she's sitting right in a corner by the window. All you know, over in the corner. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But it's amazing because it's like a hive, you know,
yeah.
just
busy.
Rows and rows and rows and rows of drafting tables. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
We got to meet just about everybody in that place at one time or another.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great. So good to talk to you.
Yeah. Great to talk to you.
I'm so glad Sweet was still in existence, yeah. Because it meant a lot to me to get. I traveled all over the country going to Sweet
conventions.
Yeah. And the company always sent me. Yeah. I will say that.
That's impressive because some of the Sweet presidents during that time period, their companies did not pay for them to travel.
Yeah.
The presidents, and they had trouble getting the time off to go.
I'm sure.
You know? Yeah.
I think one thing we benefited was we grew up knowing that moms work. Some moms really work. And we were both impressed with her job.
Yeah, it was never like, oh, I'm going to grow up and get married and not work. I don't know. I just always was like, well, yeah, you go out and you work.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Yeah. And, the other thing is, I don't know if companies operate the same way something like Orco. That's what they always called it, was Orco. And it was a giant, it was a company family. Mm-hmm. They had annual Christmas parties. And they had a band, the Orco Cats. And did you ever play with the Orco Cats?
No.
No, okay. But they had a jazz band that got together and they did stuff. And companies, it's just
a whole different culture.
It's a whole different culture now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they really nurtured their employees. And that was a very rare experience, I've come to find out. I just always thought that's how it was. Yeah. But, and, you know, they let her bring us kids in the shop.
Yeah.
We went and ran around the shop, ran around the drafting room.
We would go up to the drafting room and say hi to all our friends.
All the guys. I remember her.
They all know us.
I remember, I don't think it was her, but I remember somebody showing me how to move the big T-square around on the drafting board and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, that was like take your daughters to work day before there was such a thing. Your daughters to work day. I don't think it rubbed. You know, that drafting thing didn't rub off on either one of us, but you know, we got to go, and so we got to see, you know, we got to see this big, huge factory and mm-hmm. all that stuff, and you know, that you know, wasn't perfect. They didn't give her enough money for what she did. She didn't get as much of a pension as all the guys that did the work right alongside with her did, but you know, there were a lot of pluses to it also.
The only thing is when they set up the pension, Alex, who was the controller, said, you never have to worry, you'll always get your pension. He said, I set it up so they can't take it away from
me. Oh, that's nice. Because a lot of companies.
And I still get it. It isn't much, but it's something.
Pensions away and started 401ks, and we were allowed to roll over our money. But after that,
yes, No, pensions are pretty much a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. So, All right.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming.